Hey, what it do, sports fans? Welcome to the Sports Live podcast brought to you by Multimedia Live. I'm Sboom Jikeliso, your host, and I will be joined by various guests on this exciting new podcast to discuss the latest ins and outs of the sporting world. Hey guys, it's that time of the year where we know that you're sitting in front of your computer pretending to be working, but in truth, you're listening to the Sports Live podcast. And we really, really appreciate you being part of this journey. Sports Live podcast has been running for nearly 6 months now, and we have amazing, amazing content to last you through till you get that deserved December break. And starting this week with the head coach of the national women's soccer team, I'm talking about none other than Desiree Ellis, who of course has an amazing story to tell. Aside from that, we actually delve into issues and some of the highlights of the year regarding the women's game, and it's a great conversation, and we hope to have her over a whole lot more. Great mind of the game. She understands the game of football in a way that nobody else that I've spoken to about football does, and I think you guys will enjoy this and plenty other conversations that we have in store for you. We will not be delving, however, into the mainly live stuff or the updates, but of course, you know, you can always go to timeslive.co.za, Soweton Live, BD Live, as well as all the other group sites where you'll get all your content. And of course, use the hashtag SportsLive to interact with us and chat with us. If you've got something to say, if you'd like to share something with the Sports Live podcast or to react to some of the conversations we've had recently. And if you've missed it, we've had Bantu Olomisa reacting to Mbuyiseni Ndlozi talking about the Springboks. We've had Warren Whiteley and Ryan Kankowski reacting to the Springbok World Cup victory. We've had Mahlatsi Mphahlele talking about the Sundowns dynasty. Is it coming to an end or not? We've had Elliot Fana talking about the rise of Lukanyo Am and Makazole Mapimpi from all the way from the border Bulldogs. We had Mark Haskins talking about the Kaizer Chiefs' title search. So we've had quite a lot in the recent weeks, which if you have missed, please go to atimeslive.co.za/multimedia, where you will find the Sports Live podcast, and you will definitely hear a whole lot of other interviews that we've had and other episodes which have been truly, truly amazing. It's been great. Please do enjoy this next episode of the Sports Live podcast. I am especially excited because our next guest is probably the most prestigious sports person we've had in studio and perhaps on this podcast. We've had professional athletes, we've had professional coaches from rugby, cricket, as well as football. But for the first time, we are having a national team coach. Please, ladies and gentlemen, round of applause for Miss Desiree Ellis, who is the national women's team coach, otherwise known as Banyana Banyana. Welcome, Desiree, and thank you so much for making time to come to the Sports Live podcast.
Sboo, thanks for having me, and I'm really humbled by your kind words.
Yeah, no, you are definitely the most high-profile, most distinguished guest we've had so far in this 5 or 6 months that we've been pushing the podcast for the group. And I must say, I am very, very excited, but I'll try to keep my nerves down and be as professional as I possibly can. But welcome. Obviously, everybody has taken note of the job you've done as coach of the national women's team. Prior to you becoming permanent, you had a long run of, I think, 18 months or almost 2 years where you were in an interim role. And, you know, a lot of people, including myself, were clamoring for you to become permanent. How hard was it for you to be patient and just continue to coach the team without the security of knowing that, okay, I'm the head coach now. I've got this. I've got the job.
You know, first of all, it's always a collective from us. It's never about an individual. But, you know, when I got appointed as the interim coach, I just took it in my stride. You know, I wanted to make sure that that the team is well prepared, that the team is well organized and everything else. And whatever happens going forward, whether it's me or whether it's someone else that gets the job, that the team is in the good shape. But I believe that you can only control the controllables. And my faith is strong, and I believe that if God wanted it to happen, it would have happened. And they always say God is always on time. So it happened like in a week prior to us going to the Cyprus Cup when I was appointed as the head coach. But, you know, God puts you in the right place at the right time.
Yeah, I can imagine. And I've read and listened to a lot of interviews you've done in the past, and from that, I've gathered that your father, who unfortunately is late, was a very big influence in your footballing career, your love for the sport. How proud do you think he would have been to see you actually become a head coach?
I think I'm becoming emotional, but I think immensely. You know, he was the driving force. He was the critic, the biggest critic I ever had.
Yeah.
You know, he never had, never said that I did well. But behind my back, he would speak to people and say,
"Fathers usually, like,
you know, you get some fathers that, you know, are not too critical of their children." But my dad was very critical, and I always wanted to do better and do better. And I think that's the reason why I went out and really did the best that I could
do
to please him. But we'd win 5-0, I'd scored 5 goals, and he'd still not be happy.
Sheesh, it drives a hard bargain.
No, definitely, but I can only think that, you know, he would have been immensely proud. There's no two ways about that.
No, it's incredible. I mean, also, you played in an era where the first national women's team was formed, and you were part of it, and now we're only now talking about trying to professionalize the women's game. So you played in an era where putting together a women's national team was probably like, I don't know, putting together like a whole new sport altogether, you know. What was it like in those early days where, you know, I guess what players have now, I mean, when you've got Refilwe Jane playing for AC Milan ladies, it's chalk and cheese.
Yeah, I mean, it's a luxury. I remember, you know, getting the opportunity to come for a tryout for Banyana, the very first squad, and working in a meat market, and really very excited. And the boss is saying, "Look, it's up to you." And I'm thinking, you know what? You know, at the very young age of 30, this is a dream. And our former late president Nelson Mandela got released, and I got this opportunity. We traveled in a minibus in those days, coming up for a tryout to make the national team, and made the national team as the vice captain back then. You know, and on the way back, you know, we got a puncture, and I got to work late, and I lost my job. But
at a meat market.
At a meat market.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say I didn't care, but I was not living my dream, you know, the dream of being part of the national team.
Yeah, yeah.
And on debut, scored a hat-trick, one of three players, and we won 40-0.
Something, yeah.
Won 40-0 against Swaziland, that's right.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
You know, I had the likes of Kabu Zita, you know, Fikile Sotoli, Sibongile Kamalo. I mean, those were fantastic players.
Yeah.
Back then, Joanne Solomon came after. Porsche came almost when I retired, but what a group of players I played with in that era.
What a great group of players. Mm-hmm. I mean, also, somebody said to me recently that South African sports and in football are the most prodigious when it comes to raw talent. Because to put together a national team off the streets is ridiculous. And you'll find that we're still not at the level of coaching expertise that we ought to be, especially in at development level. But still, we're still able to produce a team that can go to the FIFA Women's World Cup this year, and the men's team has been punching above its weight for a while. And, like, do you agree with that naturally, that there were a lot of, you played with and against a lot of naturally talented South African women at the time?
No, most definitely, you know, I think Kabu Zita, I think she's the most skillful player I've ever played with and against.
Yeah.
She could do things with the ball that no one else could do.
Yeah.
You know, Joanne, I think, a natural goal scorer, which the country is dying for at this present moment. Fakile Sotoli, she wasn't called 16 bell for nothing, yeah. You know, all the skills, etc. Then you had Portia coming in late, and I knew Portia as a 14-year-old. I remember there was a player back in Cape Town who was going to be the next thing in Cape Town football, and Portia completely destroyed her in one tournament.
Really? What was the player's name, if you remember?
I think her name was Kamalita. I'm not 100% sure, but Portia,
but she was like the next best thing
was going to be from Cape Town football, and Portia absolutely destroyed her. You know, people think she's arrogant, but she's got this self confidence, arrogance about her that, you know, give me the ball and I can do whatever that's how good Portia was. And as a 14-year-old, she made our under 19 national team, along with another talent from Cape Town who eventually fizzled out because of injury, Candace Lowe.
Yeah.
But we have such a lot of talent in this country, but it's got to be nurtured properly.
I think that is
the big thing.
Yeah,
people tend to not concentrate on the basics. Because if you can't pass and receive, you can't take it to the next level. You know, I speak to Leandra, and she says that all they do in Sweden is passing drills, and you can see the benefits of that.
Yeah.
You know, the benefits, because we are a short nation. We're never going to be competing with a wing play and all of that. So, you know, and the biggest challenge we face, obviously, as you know, it's goal scoring.
Yeah. And, you know, with all the challenges that have come and passed, you've managed to, you're the one coach that's actually gotten the Banyana team a little over the line over some stumbling blocks, like beating Nigeria in competition. We did that at the last AFCON. Unfortunately, we couldn't do it when it mattered the most in the final. But psychologically, that aura about them is gone now. They can't say that we've never lost to South Africa or we've never lost a competitive game to South Africa. After that, and that must have freed your players to just go out there, and that was a tournament where they qualified for the World Cup. So I mean, that must have been great for self-belief.
I think the self-belief really started in 2017 when we were 3-0 down to Zambia in the CASAFA Cup semi-finals. With about, I think it was the 73rd, 74th minute, we were down. And we just couldn't get going in that game. And then just out of nowhere, the score was 3-3. And I think that's where everything changed, you know. And then preparing for the AFCON, we knew 2018 was going to be very, very important. And then I got appointed in February as the head coach. We went to Cyprus. We got our best position ever, fifth position, and very close to even getting a better position. And then, obviously, the CASAFA Cup with Cameroon and Uganda being there. And I remember 2016 when we went to AFCON, the first half we were outstanding, and Cameroon just bullied us off the ball, physically. And that was going to be a challenge for us in AFCON. And I think our superior fitness really told in that tournament. And we knew that we were on the right path. The draw came out, and it's Nigeria. It's Nigeria. And we knew, you know, that we needed to be in superb physical condition. And I work with a fantastic group of people, performance analysts who's really down to the T, really in detail on opponents, assistant coach who knows, you know, the players and everything else, and fitness trainer as well. And we made sure we had a camp early. We made sure that we put things into place. We left for Ghana early, you know. Had a friendly against them, played some players who had just come back. But we knew the first game was going to be the most important. And I think the players were absolutely magnificent in putting the plan together, forcing Nigeria to play a different type of football than they used to, you know.
Yeah, because they used to lumping it up and really being direct, being very, very direct.
But I must admit, you know, it was really in the football gods were really on our side. They got a chance early on, you know, and they didn't take it. And they expected Tembi to play because he had planned.
Yeah.
He had planned. He came to all our Cyprus.
He came to all our Cyprus Cup games.
Yeah. But we had played players in different positions, and he had planned for Tembi. And when Tembi came on, I don't think they were ready.
Sure. And what a phenomenal talent Temi Kgatlana was, and what a gorgeous score at the FIFA World
Cup
as well in France.
She surprises us so much with those fantastic goals she scores.
I know. I mean, it even had the British tabloids gushing about that goal. And I know it wasn't the perfect outcome in terms of results and stuff like that. But I thought South Africa being a plucky underdog, first timers, I thought, you know, there were moments where you felt that, you know, bounce of the ball this way or that way, you could have gotten a result. But to be at that stage, I think for me that was a victory. That was a massive victory actually for the country. The biggest pity, though, I have to mention this, is that it wasn't televised to the masses. That was the biggest thing. And I think moving forward, broadcast, and I know, and we're going to talk about the SAFA Women's League that began this year, broadcast is about as integral to professionalizing the game as any other aspect of the game.
No, most definitely. You know, you want to attract sponsors,
yeah,
and you attract sponsors through that. And it's unfortunate that it wasn't played to the masses didn't see it. It was just unfortunate. And, I still get goosebumps thinking about the moment when you walk out there and you see the South African flag and the anthem gets sung. And it was an emotional moment for all of us.
Yeah.
But I was just very excited that the players were not in awe of it. And as you said, if the ball had bounced differently, if we'd scored the second goal,
yeah,
and just after half time scored 2-0, there's no way we were going to concede 3.
Yeah.
And then the VAR decisions that went against us came at crucial times. Because I was timing everything. I said, if we can not concede by the 70th minute, we're going to win this. And then we conceded the first penalty.
Ah, yeah.
Yeah.
And then, from there, I think the morale of the team as well kind of dips a little bit. Because in the game, you had those milestones. And so you got players thinking, no, we've conceded. And then
we were still in it, though, at 1-1. But pushing and then 2-1 down and with 10 players,
yeah,
pushing. You're naturally going to get caught.
Yeah.
But I thought no one really gave us a chance. You looked at Thailand, they lost 13-0. Much higher ranked than us.
Yeah.
So people expected really, really big scores.
Yeah.
But I felt that we gave a good account of ourselves, not having a professional league, having to send out programs to players to make sure they come into camp in a good shape.
Yeah.
And that's why I take my hat off to the professionalism of the players, because they really go out and work.
It's crazy. Prior to that tournament, I was listening to this lovely Sports Illustrated podcast in the US. You know, they obviously have the best team in the world. They're world champions, multiple times world champions. But they were talking about how it was back in the day, how the women's game evolved, and it's still fairly young in when we're talking global sports, right? About how FIFA's rules were 80 minutes for a women's match, because they didn't think women could play 90 minutes, and they had all these rules that were so archaic and largely sexist and stuff that really did not make sense. And the FIFA Women's World Cup wasn't really a World Cup until 1999. It was like the FIFA Women's Championship or something like that. They wouldn't recognize it as a World Cup, and it took a long, long time for the women's game to be where it was. When we saw the France tournament, the biggest television audience that it's ever had, kind of transcended the game, really. What was it like to actually be there and witness possibly the tournament that said to the world, look, women's football is like here, and it's not a separate sporting code to the rest of football?
You know, it boils down to a whole lot. The professionalism of everybody at the tournament.
Yeah.
The logistics, everything else around the tournament said to us that you're at a different level now.
Yeah.
You know, and being part of it, the way everything was set up, on time, everything is set up for you. You have meetings prior, to all of that. And when we went for the draw, we had to sit down with different people. looking at accommodation, looking at transport, where we were going to train. We even went to the one stadium, etc. So it's not something that we were used to, because for all of us, it was our first time.
Yeah.
But just the whole professionalism of it, but also players now being able to test themselves against other players that they've seen on television, you know, or that some of them might even have idolized.
Yeah.
And for them to be able to test themselves at that level, and the messages you get from fellow coaches, you know, Jill Ellis sent me an email and she says, "You guys have got this," you know. And when we left the World Cup, she said, "You should be proud of what the whole group has achieved," because I think people didn't expect that. Coming from a World Cup winning coach.
Of course. You know? That must be like the biggest pat on the back. And that USA team is something else.
But then again, you know, with the USA, the resources they have.
Of course. But do you know the model that got them there? Also, again, this is from me listening to hours and hours of podcasts and having nothing much to do with my life. You know, in the U.S., they have this scholarship by law, varsity scholarship, where if you take a sporting scholarship, you can choose a sport you want to play as long as you play a particular sport. And what they did was they opened that to football for women. So for every sporting scholarship that the men enjoy, whether it's basketball, NFL, or baseball, they have to offer an equal amount
to girls. It's called Title IX.
It came into effect,
and that's where there was equal scholarships.
Yes.
Prior to that, there was nothing.
Exactly.
There was equal scholarships, and that's where everything started.
And then you found all the young girls said, okay, I can go in and play football, and I can get an education as well. And then that just opened up, I think they said about like 3 million, a pool of 3 million players just suddenly exploded throughout the whole of the U.S. And, you know, in South Africa, we're struggling with, trying to make the game truly professional and spreading it out as much as possible. Why are we battling to put in some of these legislative...
I think it also requires sponsorship more than anything. You're always urging sponsors to come on board because... Everything that starts, it needs a little bit of money.
It does, yeah.
But it's not where we want to be. The National League is now recently formed, but it's not where we want to be. But it's a start in the right direction.
Yeah.
You know, players are traveling now. It's a little bit more professional. They almost come into camp. Mm. They get to play against other teams from different provinces. And I think the level has been raised a bit. Because it's the best teams out of the different provinces. So the level has been raised a bit, and it's putting a lot of teams and players and coaches under pressure.
Yeah.
To get themselves organized and to get themselves sorted. Before, when it was just launched, most of the players in the national team were still coming from the SAS League. Now, the recent one... to Japan, there were only 5 players that came from the SAS League.
Ah.
And we had said that in the not-too-distant future, most of the best players are going to be playing in the National League.
Yeah.
And a lot of the teams have already recruited those players.
Of
so
course.
It's already getting better and better.
Yeah. SASO League, of course, you had very strong clubs like Janine van Beek's club, JVW.
They
girls.
Just won the Gauteng League, yeah.
Ah, they're incredible. The stuff Janine van Beek does for the game, I think, is going to be more amazing than what she's done actually on the pitch. And UWC, usually another strong team. And nationally, your Mamelodi Sundowns ladies.
You have your TUTU with the Sasol National
TUT
Champions
as well.
It's a big game this weekend.
Yeah.
Mamelodi Sundowns and TUT.
Oh, really? Is that this weekend?
Really,
oh.
Really top of the table clash. Really looking forward to that. And, it gives players now an opportunity to test themselves at a level as well.
How often do you watch games? Do you try and watch as much as possible? I know a few have been broadcast.
That's
right. I know the guys at SAFA have been trying to push the broadcast aspect of it, and I know we've got sponsors like Sasol and Nike who've tried to hop on to the national women's game, which is great. I mean, they've done phenomenal stuff, but they can't be alone. Excuse me, they can't be alone.
No.
There has to be an influx. I mean, there has to be competitive sponsorship as well. I mean, we've got some of the biggest in terms of stars, Tembi, we've spoken about, Rufilwe, Leandra, you know, I think not just maybe team sponsorship, but personal sponsorship as well.
A lot of them are sponsored individually, Nike, Umbro, etc. And that has transcended from the national team doing so well.
So
but
well,
I agree
yeah.
with you. You cannot do it without sponsorship. And I'm surprised that no one has come on board, you know, with the national team doing so well.
Yeah.
I'm surprised that no one has come on board to support Cecil, because they on their own cannot do it alone, you know. You urged more sponsors to come on board. And now with there being a game, sometimes there were two games every weekend. Mm. And one game sometimes as well being broadcast, the mileage is there for the sponsors to come on board, because this is the start of professionalism, but it's still purely amateur if you look at it on a national level, and hopefully in the not too distant future it's going to become professional. But I think this is preparing everyone for the next stage, you know, to become professional. And we're hoping that the sponsors will come on board pretty shortly, because it can only help the game develop even further. Our U17s and our U20s don't even have a sponsor, you know. So it just shows, if that comes on board, how far the game can be developed even further.
I know you've been involved with the Walter Sisulu, or the Discovery Walter Sisulu Soccer Challenge. What is a youth process like in the women's game? What are the levels, and how is the development like in at that level of the game?
Look, we have the LFAs around the country. I know there's not all the LFAs that do have it, but there's under 13, under 15, and under 17 girls football as well. But I think the varsity sports has been big.
Right.
I think they've sort of bridged the gap from school level. We're not many game really much football is played to club football, and it sort of almost bridged that gap. You know, they've given players the opportunity to play. The Varsity Cup is big. The USA Club Champs is big. You have the World Student Games. And if you look at the national team now compared to when I was playing, back then there was maybe 90% that were unemployed. Now you have 90 or even more that are graduates or that are currently still studying.
And that
you know, so
and some of them have gotten chances in the US, obviously. Janine,
that's correct.
I know Amogelang Mutau as well, who was the under 20 captain not so long ago.
We have quite a few players. She's in the US. Players studying in the US.
Linda was in the US as well,
but she was at Houston Dash along with Janine and Tembi.
Yes,
you have Nelly Mamabolo that was in the US.
Yes.
You had Nomula that was in the US. You had Rashana, you had Shamal that was in the US. You had Megan Newman that has come back.
Yeah.
That was in the US. You had Odie that studied in the US. So, you know, there was a lot of players.
Jermaine as well.
She went to Samford that studied in the US.
Yeah.
So there's quite a Kaylin Swat studied in the US. Robin Moodley studied in the US. So those are all the opportunities that players got out of football.
And you take an education out of that as well, which is amazing.
But now in South Africa it's even bigger.
Yeah.
It's even bigger. Yeah. You know, you in the National League currently, you have three universities. Okay. You have University of Johannesburg, you have TUT, and you have UWC. So it shows how the game has grown.
I love the UWC sports program. I think Chester Williams, the late Chester Williams, was the head of rugby there, and I think before he passed away, he was overseeing
the whole sports
program. And just the way they take sports on, as of course education is their core, but they feed the sporting to the education.
No, that's true. The current Banyana assistant coach is the head coach of UWC.
There you go.
Jabulile Baloyi, who's the assistant coach of the University National Team, is at the University of Johannesburg.
Ah,
you know, Maud Kumalo is at Tux University.
So you've got synergy as well within the national team.
Because the head coach of the University National Team is the assistant coach of Banyana.
Yeah.
So it's all that.
So now it feeds in. Also, she's your eyes then.
That's correct, yeah.
Elsewhere when you're not there, because you can't be everywhere.
No.
Yeah.
I mean, with all due respect, we haven't most probably seen thousands and thousands of players.
Quite possibly, yeah.
And
it's
just unfortunate because, you know, you cannot be everywhere all the time, and people don't realize how difficult it is to select a squad.
Yeah, I can imagine. I mean, there were a few people who weren't happy not being part of the World Cup squad as well, but that's selection. People miss out, and it is painful for those that do miss out and those that...
Actually, people don't know that, but as a former national player, I got dropped 4 times. Oof. And I had to find my way back into the national squad all the time. So it's not easy, but, you know, it's quite difficult. I think the worst thing as a coach is to tell a player that they haven't made it. Mm. Because it doesn't mean that the player... is not a good player,
yeah.
But each and every coach, you know, has what they're looking for that they think will add value to the team. And sometimes that player just doesn't fit in, you know.
Ah, it's a bit harsh. Yeah, I know it's hard for any sportsman or woman. I remember I'm a big basketball fan. Michael Jordan, even at his Hall of Fame speech, couldn't forget that his college basketball coach dropped him from the college team. Now, can you imagine? This guy went on to
be the best in the world.
Yeah, to be the best in the world, but he still couldn't forget that he got dropped from a college football team. So it does sting, but I guess that's when mental fortitude comes into the game and stuff like that. And I don't want to leave this conversation without mentioning one thing that actually we have in common is the fact that we've had stints at Kickoff Magazine. Now, please tell me about that period. Nick said, I think, and Mark Gleason told me about a time when you were part of the Kickoff Magazine stuff. And when was that, and what was your role in there?
Well, as I said earlier, I lost my job playing for the national team, so I was out of work for 3 years. Yeah. And in between doing the door-to-door sales and... all of that. And then Mark Leeson was the editor of Kickoff at the time.
Yeah.
He had approached me to do his fan mail, to do his fan mail at R5 a letter.
Yeah.
And I would go in and do his mail. And he said, you didn't have to work the whole time. And I said, well, I've been out of work for 3 years. And then from there, I would run to subscription in the Touchline media department, subscription, and then run for the lost taxi.
Yeah.
To get home. And then Jerome McCarthy, who was working in the photo agency, he was going to sign for AmaZulu. Mm. And he left immediately, and I got offered the permanent position. So I worked for the same company that Kickoff was in. It was called Touchline.
Touchline. Back then, before.
I worked for the same company as a first a librarian and then as assistant picture editor. And then when I became ambassador for the World Cup, 2007, I obviously had to relinquish that job.
Yeah.
You know, and then go out and do what I love. And when the World Cup was over, it was, what am I going to do now?
Yeah.
You know, so I've always been involved in sport.
And the chance to come back and coach, how did that come about?
Look, you don't realize it, but on the field, you're a coach.
Okay.
Because you're busy directing things on the field.
Yeah.
You know, people used to call me a traffic cop because my hands were all over the show. And I remember getting sent home from one of the camps because I got injured to go do a coaching course with Horse Krita. I mean, it's way back. And then Sarami said to me, you're not going to play forever, you know. And a guy from the Bale, PJ Williams, you're not going to play forever. And then I started doing my coaching license. And then Vera came along. You know, Vera Powell came along, and it was a whole bunch of coaches that went to sit down with her. And I was still working for the SABC. I did a game.
Yes.
And came back to coaching. And then Vera texted me. She wanted to speak to me and wanted me to be part of assistant for the first match. That's were the words, the first match.
Just the first match.
The first match. Yeah, and then I became an assistant, and I wish back then when I was playing, we had what they have now, video analysis. It would have made me an even better player.
Yeah.
The attention to detail. I mean, you just go into the field and you just play. And when you get to a set piece, you just pick up the person the same height as you.
Yeah.
Now there's a little bit more attention
way
to
more
detail.
Information saves you time. You go straight to where the ball is.
Who the physical,
where the
who
spaces
the,
are.
You know, we would say if it's a physical person, you know, Norco would, the best header, maybe Leandro would, etc.
Okay. So
we'd
pair
them up like that, and everybody's got a role at a defensive set piece.
Yeah.
It's not just people standing there for the sake of standing there. So it's all that attention to detail that I never had when I was playing. We would just go onto the field and we just play, you know. So, but it's all about those small attention to details, and then the video analysis. You know, having to be able to look at yourself and critically analyze yourself and see in relation to the game plan, did I play well? Did I do what I was supposed to do? We never had that back then. And I think that helps a lot, being able to get as much footage of the opposition. Yeah. I mean, that's where our analyst, Shalene, is really good because of the network that she has. So you have a game of Japan before you even played Japan. We had a recent game of there. So we could naturally see what they were doing and how we could plan against that.
Right. Yeah, it's a different world.
It's not
now.
Just playing the whistle anymore.
No, it's a completely different world. I mean, dietary requirements.
Exactly.
I mean, the ladies are looking leaner these days, are quicker. I don't know, maybe it's the game's quicker or not, but I mean, Temi Khatlana is...
No, she's lightning quick.
Very quick.
No, so. she's matured over the last year or so. She's just been unbelievable.
And close control as well.
She's really not matured only as a player, but as an individual as well. You know, it's really been an eye-opener.
Yeah.
Not the first year making the CAF Awards and not getting the award. And I still remember having the conversation with her. It was something we posted on Instagram. And I sent it to her a year later.
Yeah.
And I said, if you are part of the Banyana that goes to the World Cup, I'm sure you're going to have a very good chance of getting the CAF award. And then she gets two, the goal of the year award.
Yes, she got the goal of the year.
Yeah.
And what was the second one?
CAF player of the year.
Ah, yes, CAF player of the year. And you were CAF coach of the year.
That's correct, obviously. Yeah.
Ah, I doff my correct. Cap off to you, metaphorically speaking, because I'm not wearing a cap today. And football's been wooing Caster Semenya. That's been the big headline in the news lately. Obviously, a woman of Caster's stature will bring a lot of eyeballs to the game.
I've had a chat with her on a few occasions, trying to invite her down to come to our training, but she's always been busy. But I think when I heard she was in France, I thought, okay, here's the opportunity for her to come down. And she didn't hesitate to come down.
Yeah, she came and spent time with the team. Yeah,
that's right. She's just an inspiration, you know. I think all the diversity, all the challenges that she faced, she still goes out and perform. You know, and I think people don't realize the effort that goes into all of that. But she's just been tremendous, and now she's dabbling into football at JVW. That's going to be quite interesting.
That is going to be very interesting. I might make a few trips down to the east myself to just see her play. But I do appreciate the role you've played in South African football, and I do hope that in the near future we see that this transition that I feel is happening with the women's game, it become fully professional. And as much as it's great that the young women and young girls getting into the game are getting a fabulous education, they're doing it through what the US model did it before, obviously maybe not as big a scale. But it would be great if they weren't bound to other professions just to make a living. And they can apply themselves, you know, to the game. And I've spoken when I was still editor at Kickoff after Maggie left. So I came in as editor, and I really wanted to get the story of women's football out, because a lot of it, and I see everything as interconnected. So the play on the field and the coaching is connected to the broadcast and the sponsorship and the storytelling. Like, so the journalists have a role as well to get the messaging out there, not necessarily get the scores and stuff, like all the boring stuff out, you know, and stats, but the stories, stuff even in the men's game that really makes it kind of sexy, you know.
No, it's important, you know. People see the player on the field, but they don't really know who the player is,
exactly,
where the player comes from, the sacrifices the player has made. People don't see all of that. You know, they just see the glamour. You're on TV, but it's not just all about that. It's a whole package put in players, the sacrifices they make going to training every day. You know, all of those sacrifices they make, and it's not even a full time job. You know, that's the sacrifices they make. But I think we just have to keep performing. Mm. I think it's already changed mindsets. It's already changed perceptions.
Yeah.
I remember a few years ago I was in Durban, and there were two players from the US national team that came down. Mm. They had a little project there. I remember Veronica Pewa being there. by the way, the best left footer. The best left footer I've ever played with. And again, she could kick a ball. She once got 7 goals.
Yeah.
7 or 8 goals in a COSAFA Cup match. We were all there. And they were speaking about where their game was and where it went to. And it's almost a similar path. You know, it's a similar path where when they eventually started winning these top tournaments, the World Cups and the Olympics, people really, really started to take notice of them. And now, you know, they're the best team in the world.
Yeah,
You know, and the men's team are not currently doing that.
Not even close. They're not even
doing that well, and they're the best team in the world. Back-to-back World Cups. That's insane.
Incredible.
I mean, that's insane. So we just got to keep pushing. We just got to keep performing. And get to the tournaments and even do better than what we're doing. And hopefully that will change even more minds and more perceptions and get more sponsors on board.
Yeah, hopefully. And it starts with the storytelling. Some incredible stories, I can tell you that for free. I mean, I've interviewed Amogelang, and there's a nice story. I'm sure you know Busisiwe Mokoena. She did for us on Junaid Hartley's daughter.
Oh, yes, Faika.
Yes, mm-hmm. Faika. Her mom used to play.
She's studying at University of Johannesburg.
Yes, she's at UJ. And I thought, you know what, for her to still embrace football after what her dad had gone through in the game, you know, I thought that was quite incredible. That still one of the stories that stick out for me, stories that we love in all other sports. We need to hear those stories in women's football.
No, that's true.
Stories of perseverance.
That's true. A lot of the players are breadwinners, even though they're not professional footballers. So the family relies on them.
Yeah.
You know, and I think them going out there onto the field and playing, you know, that is the effort and the work they put in. I remember December when everybody was having fun.
Yeah.
These girls were training. Preparing for Netherlands and Sweden.
Yeah.
You know, they just got off Christmas and Boxing Day and New Year's Day, and we used to send out training on a regular basis to make sure, because it's the off season, you know, to make sure that players come back in a good shape. And that is the commitment and the dedication. The staff itself, we don't all live in the same province, so we're regularly chatting, interacting on how we can get the team to be better, how we can do better things as well. You know, it's for us as a collective, and we always say if the team does well, the individual will stand out, because we pride ourselves on teamwork. Yes, you have the individuals like Tembi, you know,
Fifi,
etc. You have those individuals, but without the teamwork, for us, we pride ourselves on that teamwork in all aspects. Because if you're not together as a team, then you know you cannot get the results and the performances that you want. So whatever accolades come out of that, the team is always first.
Incredible stuff. Thank you, Coach. I must say that as a country, very proud of the achievements you've done in a short space of time, and hopefully you continue in the job and you leave one heck of a legacy as a Banyana legend and a head coach.
I just want to say something, you know, the role that Sasol has played.
Yeah.
I don't think we'd have football without them. They've been tremendous, not only in the league, but in supporting Banyana. And then, of course, you cannot leave the federation out.
Yeah.
The support that we've gotten as female coaches has been tremendous, you know, from Coach Malifi to Coach Thabo Senong, you know, to Franz, who's the coaching educator. I think sometimes as coaches, we're afraid to ask. But when you have such great support and stuff that you can bounce off, when Coach Shorty came back from the World Cup, you know, we could sit and say what were the challenges that she faced, because we were going to the World Cup. So it's all that interaction and that synergy that you have. And I'm just grateful that I have that fantastic soundboard that I can bounce off, you know, because it really, really helps, really helps.
Does it help to have a woman at the table, really Dwaba being there as the first female vice president of SAFA?
Well, she's really fought for women's football, you know, along with the likes of Natasha Chiklis, the likes of Fanny Hilton Smith, the likes of Nomsa Mahlangu. They've really fought for women's football. And we wouldn't be where we are if it weren't for those people, you know, fighting for women's football and making sure that we get the opportunity to play. So for that, we're extremely grateful for them being around and just being able to also bounce off. You know, we're able to do that. And I think my family has also got to take a lot of credit, me being away from home, but just being a phone call away. So, yeah, it's the sacrifices you make for something that you love and really enjoy. Because I believe we're not put on earth just to be, but to make a difference. And hopefully people will remember me in making a difference.
Ah, certainly you've already made one hell of a difference already. And I'm sure there's a whole lot more to come. Thank you so much, Coach.
Thank you for having me.
All right, that was our chat with Banyana Banyana head coach Desiree Ellis. Fantastic chat. I could sit and chat to her all day, if I'm being honest, but we do have a time limit, even though this is a lovely little podcast. I hope everybody who's listened to this has enjoyed it. And, you know, take a little bit of time to go out there and enjoy a women's game, and you'll find that you might have a blast. Go out to the Soweto Nike Center to watch a game during the SAFA National Women's League, and you'll be amazed at what you'll be able to see. You'll be entertained, at least I'll tell you that for free. All right, that's me, Sibumi Jikeleso, host of the Sports Life Podcast. That's it from me, Sibumi Jikeleso, and you've been listening to the Sports Live Podcast. Thank you so much for joining us. Do also catch us on timeslive.co.za, as well as Sowetan Live, Business Live. We are also on Iono FM, the Apple Podcast Store, or wherever you get your podcasts. It could be Spotify, Stitcher, CastBox, Pocket Cast, wherever. To connect with us, please use the hashtag SportsLive. Share your comments with us at TimesLive or at Sowetan Live on Twitter. A big thank you goes out to the Multimedia Live team led by Scott Peter Smith and producer Paige Muller, as well as the Tiso Black Star Digital Sports Department headed by Mninawa Mchana Ntloko. Our sound and audio mixer is Innocent Manyike. From us at the Sports Live Podcast, it's goodbye for now.